We want to welcome you to the Oklahoma Watch Out, titled Straight Talk with Teachers. I am David Fritze, executive editor of Oklahoma Watch. We're a nonprofit, nonpartisan journalism organization, and we produce content, in-depth content, on a wide range of public policy issues. One of those is education, which is a very big topic this year. It's a big topic every year, but we'll be talking tonight about the questions and concerns of teachers and those who work with teachers, just because that issue especially has been in the news lately, whether it's pay or pressures in the classroom. We want just a few words about our format. It's very simple. I moderate the panel. I'll ask a few questions of our panelists, whom I'll introduce, and then we'll open it up for any questions and comments from the audience. But I want to express some thanks. We want to thank our partners. Technical support has been provided by Frank Crystal with KWGS and the Oklahoma Public Media Network. We also want to thank Baxter's Interurban Grill for donating this event space. And please enjoy their fine food and drink at your leisure. That really should cover it. I should add that the opinions expressed here tonight are not necessarily those of Oklahoma Watch or Baxter's Interurban Grill. But let me introduce our panelists. We have Dr. Estella Bitson, who is principal for Hawthorne Elementary School and Tulsa Public Schools. And Dr. Bitson has she has been was a teacher for 18 years before becoming a principal in Jefferson City, Missouri. And under her leadership, Hawthorne has experienced a dramatic increase in student proficiency rates. She was also featured in a recent Tulsa World project that's at Inside and F School. We also want to welcome Dallas Cohn, who teaches history and social studies at Union Ninth Grade Center School in Union Public Schools. He's been a teacher for about 13, 14 years, and has been involved with pre-AP since the district signed on 10 years ago. He is a National Board Certified teacher. And also, we welcome Meredith Brown, a sixth grade teacher at Disney Elementary. She has about 2.5 years teaching experience, is from originally from Allen, Texas, and graduated from the University of Oklahoma. I would like to start out by going to our newest teacher, Meredith. There's a lot of news about teachers nowadays. There's questions about whether teachers are paid enough. There are problems with pressures in the classroom and accountability. The Reading Sufficiency Act doesn't affect sixth grade, per se. And Common Core, you name it. It all starts to sound pretty scary. So my question for you, Meredith, why did you become a teacher? When you look at all this array of problems, why go ahead and enter the classroom?
Well, I tried very hard not to be a teacher while I was in college. I changed my major 5 times in trying to avoid it, but I was, you know, extremely unhappy in every other career path that I was trying to choose. I started with nursing, and I was extremely unhappy in it. I didn't like any of the experiences that I was doing. And so I finally, after, you know, my whole life spending time in different teaching aspects, teaching swim lessons, teaching, you know, for church events, teaching, you know, around the neighborhood, helping at different events. But I was just very unhappy with everything else, and so I decided, well, this is what I always enjoyed doing throughout, you know, the past and what I really liked doing. So I switched my major to early childhood education and started doing experiences there. And it's what makes me happy. It's what I like to do. I don't enjoy the other things. Yes, there's bad aspects of teaching that I might not enjoy at that moment, but overall, teaching is, I mean, as cliche as it sounds, that's what my passion is. That's what I want to do. It's what I enjoy doing. And everything else that I tried not to because of all of the negative aspects of it, because of the low pay. I mean, my parents were so disappointed when I told them that I was going into teaching. They, even though they're, you know, my grandmother was a teacher, my aunts and everything. So I did it because like I said, it's really what I enjoy doing. It is my passion. I want to make the difference. I want the interaction, and I want to do something that I think I'm fairly good at, and that is teaching. So,
thank you. Dallas, you've been a teacher more than a dozen years, and you're a rarity in the profession in a way. We ran the numbers. There are about 20% of teachers in the state who are men. Mm-hmm. And in fact, I think we haven't seen the statistics, but I think there are probably even fewer men in the profession because more superintendents and more principals are women than in decades past. If you were to start all over again, would you become a teacher?
If I was to start all over again, I would become a teacher a lot sooner than I did. I went back to teacher school when I was almost 30 years old, so this was a second, a reboot for me. Yeah, if I had to do over again, I would start quicker and get better at it earlier. In hopes of making a, because it's, as you said, it's much more fulfilling than the way I spent a number of other years, which we won't go into here. But absolutely, yes.
What about the negatives of teaching that seem to make the news a lot? The low pay, the burnout, the turnover rates in some districts and schools. Those don't. What's your sense of that?
How do I feel about
them? Yeah.
I was fortunate, going back at almost 30 years old, I went in with my eyes open to the reality. I knew I was going to be broke, and I knew that it was, I knew kind of what the problems were going in. I'm fortunate that I'm able to work enough over the summer and at different points during the year to supplement my income. My kids are a little older, so I'm not having to raise them. The biggest issue with finances in school, I know I'm diving right in here on the introductory question. The biggest question isn't whether or not I make more or whether or not I get to go on a cruise or whatever it happens to be. The biggest problem with financing is how many more Merediths can we get, and how many more teachers can we get in the classroom, and how many more good counselors and good administrators to solve some of these problems. It's not about how much I make. It's about how many people we can get that are qualified, and how qualified are the people that we can get. Do we really want a workforce made up of people who aren't really qualified to do anything else, and so they have to become teachers? Or do we want a workforce of professionals who, if they have a calling, can at least afford to feed their families and become teachers?
Mm-hmm. Dr. Bitson, you arrived several years ago to take over the Hawthorne. When you look at what's happening with teachers now in your classroom and really district-wide, what do you do to try and keep up morale and to retain teachers?
One of the biggest things that I do at my school is to show teachers that I respect and value them as professionals. It's very important because if you don't feel valued, you're not going to give 100%. I want to provide them with resources, even if that means that I have to stay a little later after school once they leave. I want them to see me in the hallways, walking up and down the hallways, in the classrooms, being visible. But the most important thing we have to do is respect and value our teachers as professionals.
Do you think that the state of Oklahoma values teachers?
No, I feel like we have a long way to go. We need to collaborate as a team and get all the issues on the floor. But you can't do that as a dictatorship. You have to make sure that you are using your resources, and your resources are those your employees or people that are on the front line. And when I say the front line, the teachers are on the front line, and I'm there behind them supporting them. And we're here to service people, and that's what the state of Oklahoma, when we vote for them, they are for the people, and they are to hear the voices of the people. And I think our teachers are saying that you don't respect us, you don't value us, and it's not about money, it's really about respect. And when you respect a person, then you value their worth, and if that means giving them more money so that they can support their own families, so that they can stay a little longer and provide for the students in Oklahoma, then that's what we should do.
Let's go to teacher pay. The starting salary is a little over $30,000 a year. Let me just pose this as a challenge. Let me ask Dallas. You get great benefits, you have a pension system, you get summers off. You have good hours. You can you can leave earlier in the day than many professionals. Why the concern about pay? What
could go wrong? Yeah, summer's off is nice because that's when we can all work our second jobs to make up for that one. I'm not complaining. I like my insurance plan. I'm happy with what I have for the most part. But we're not going to be able to recruit the best people, or even we're not even going to be able to recruit a lot of the good people if so many qualified young people going up through college, going up through school, look at teaching. Maybe they feel the calling because we're in a generation that wants to do good, right? One nice thing about the economy collapsing in the last decade is going out and getting rich is no longer just an option for everybody with a good degree. So they want to do well, and they look at all their options for doing something meaningful, and they look at that starting salary, and a lot of them have to say, oh, I don't even think I'm going to look at that. Or they start, and they realize how much work and how much emotion and how much goes into it, and then they get a couple of paychecks, and then their husband or their wife says, we really can't. We can't do this. Or if they want to do it, they move to Texas because there they can get, it's a little better.
Mm-hmm. So Meredith, do you have to cut corners? You're close to the starting, little above the starting base salary.
I am, and I do other things to supplement that. You know, I have my own house, but I have a roommate. I take on site tech jobs. I take on a lot of extra duties, tutoring and things like that. I wouldn't say that I have to cut corners, but the hardest part is that I have no savings. You know, I don't have a backup of anything. My paycheck is, I cover my bills and everything like that, but there's not room for extra, you know, and not that I need something frivolous or that I'm asking, you know, for anything over the top, but there isn't any wiggle room. You know, if I need new tires, I'm in trouble. So.
I'd like to, we have several noteworthy guests. Well, every guest with us is noteworthy, but Dr. Keith Ballard is with us, superintendent of Tulsa Public Schools. Dr. Ballard, I'd like to ask you, we collected all of the starting salaries and average salaries for every district in the state, and we ordered them. And it was surprising to me that about 36 small districts had higher starting and higher average salaries for teachers than the largest districts in the state. Why can't Tulsa Public Schools or Oklahoma City Public Schools make a little more room in its budget to pay its teachers more?
We would love to make more room in our budget to pay teachers more. And, you know, we stretched our budget this year with no help coming from the state in order to provide a pay raise. Oftentimes, when you look at a smaller district, you'll have teachers on the upper end of the scale. And that's, you know, pretty simply why the average teacher salary will be higher. It's, you know, I've been in smaller schools, certainly been in a large school. It's a little bit easier to manage a budget in the smaller, but mainly it's really a product of teachers are staying longer in those smaller schools, and that's why their average salary will be higher. But I do believe salaries are a huge issue. I believe it is a huge issue for teachers who are entering the profession, for teachers who are there, and it is a very frustrating time when you see that the state budget could be managed better, fairly easily, could be managed so that we could provide better salaries for teachers.
If you received additional state funding, I'm sure you have many needs, but where would you apply the money in addition to any salary increase that would help teaching in the classroom?
Great question, David. Our absolute priority is salaries for teachers, but it's also positions. Part of what teachers are really dealing with that makes it tough are larger class sizes, not enough teacher aides in the classroom. If we would receive that additional money that they're talking about in the legislature, the Jim Halligan, John Ford bill, ours would go almost exclusively to more positions, teaching, teacher aid positions, and higher salaries for teachers.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Dr. Bitson, with teachers, as principal, of course, you walk this fine line. You must make sure they feel valued and respected, but you also must, as a principal, hold them accountable. When you arrived in your school, What did you do to hold teachers more accountable beyond just what the state is asking teachers to do in terms of proficiency and other measures?
The first thing I wanted to look at and view was the instructional method of the teachers. And we have the TLE process, which is our evaluation plan. And the first step was to educate our teachers on how that plan worked, the indicators and the TLE process. And as we worked through those strategies of knowing what an effective teacher looks like, then I would go in and watch teachers and observe them, and then we would talk about it and discuss what strategies they needed to be more effective in the classroom so that instruction would assist in raising academic test scores. Also, we looked at data. We looked at our students' data as far as state test scores, our reading test scores, and we collaborated a lot about what we needed to do as a staff to improve instruction within our school. And there are so many obstacles that we deal with, making the students feel confident in themselves. And so therefore, we had to look at ways that teachers would be able to motivate students within the classroom. After all of the professional development, looking at the instructional method, looking at our evaluation tool, collaborating, then that helped in assisting the teachers be more effective. But my tool was the TLE process. As I walked through the classrooms, I would evaluate the teachers to see where they need more support, more resources, because our evaluation process is not just about getting quality teachers. It's those teachers who have concerns or are falling short in the area. My job as an instructional leader is to support them, whether that's going into the classroom, teaching a lesson, and they're observing me, or providing mentors that will go in and observe the teachers. So there are a lot of things that I do within my school to hold my teachers accountable. So it's just not one clear plan as to, okay, I'm going to go in and just evaluate and say, okay, you're not, you don't have what it takes to be a teacher. Our goal is to provide the resources, the mentoring teachers need so that our students can achieve academic successes, that support.
Some critics say it's impossible to fire a teacher. It's like they have tenure. Have you ever dismissed a teacher? Have you ever, is it easy if you wish to do so?
No, it's not always easy to dismiss a teacher because that's their livelihood, but you have to do it with respecting them as humans. A teacher knows that if you're giving them all of the support that they need and you do it in a way that's non-threatening and you provide their support and put it back on them and let them see, okay, are you achieving? What do you need from me to help you be successful? Most of the time, if you help them see where they're falling short and give them their dignity as we go through the process, most teachers that I've dealt with end up saying, this is not the profession for me. I don't have what it takes to do my best for the students. And so I think that working together with the teachers, making sure you provide that support, and then if the support is not enough for the teachers, there's a plan in place that we walk through with the teacher for dismissal.
I'd like to open it up to questions or comments to those in the audience. We have two people with microphones, Evie Holzer in the back and Hannah Covington to the side there. If you have any observations you'd like to make, any up here in front is one. Hannah.
Hi, my name is Jason Arendt. I'm in Bixby Public Schools. Just a little background. I've taught in Texas for 10 years, Puerto Rico for two. Came back to my home of Oklahoma. Had the fortune of serving as a mentor teacher for TPS, and now I'm in my home of Bixby. You know, my colleagues up front, I think they're being very modest when it comes to the financial aspects of what teachers, you know, you ask a teacher, is it about the money, and they'll say no. But I'm here to say, It is about the money, okay? Not only is it obviously we're here to help our kids. Make no mistake, that is our priority, and it's because we want to. But if we have our young teachers out there, I'm fortunate that my wife is the breadwinner, okay? But I worked with so many teachers who are having to take two or three jobs. They're not able to take care of themselves. They're coming to school tired because they've worked a double shift. They don't get weekends, you know. They need that time to plan really strong lessons, to grade papers, and just to have that time to have that downtime to physically recover. Because if you've been in the classroom, you realize how draining, not only mentally and physically, it is. And that's a huge problem. So, yes, it is about money. We need to pay our teachers enough to where when they go home, they don't have to worry about their second or third job. And so I just wanted to make sure that was a point. I want to make sure that's a strong point out there. So,
thank you. Sure. I would do the microphone. Oh, I'm sorry, in the back. We'll come to you.
I've been teaching 28 years. Big emphasis on money. Okay, we're missionaries. We can have a little change of mindset here. We mold children now. We help their emotional intelligence, all the intelligences. We don't just teach. And we don't get in it for the money. We get in it because we can make a difference with all those children. Okay? I'm just, you know, it's... You're kind of making me look bad because you're thinking I'm in it for the money, and I'm not. I get to go into that classroom. I get to go into that whole school and make a difference to 520 students and make them feel loved and know their name and make them feel special, okay, where they maybe don't have that constant during the day, during the whole year. And so it's not just, there's a total, too much of an emphasis on money here. It's not really what teaching's all about anymore. It's humanitarian and making a difference in the world.
I mean, yeah. I'm a single parent. I've been single all my life. But you know what? My daughter says, she's a doctor now in Palo Alto. And she said, but mother, guess what? You get to go to your job every day for 8 hours and you love what you do. And that's more than most of the half of America can say.
You had a quick follow to that?
And I respect what you're saying. And please don't get me wrong. I'm not saying it is all about money. But we have to be paid enough to take care of ourselves. Bottom line. And the eight-hour days, I don't know if that was misspoken, but it's not those are not eight-hour days. Okay? It's more like 12, mm-hmm. possibly to 16, depending if you coach or how long you plan. But, you know... The fact is, you know, one of the teachers I worked with last year, she had to look for a roommate, like you were saying. Mm-hmm. She was at risk of literally being homeless. She was asking the church to put her up because she had so much money to pay for her student loan and, like you were saying too, takes care of all her bills. So let's say what happens if you do get, you know, one of our young teachers does get into a car accident, has to have their car repaired. Well, then, here starts the debt cycle. That should not be a concern. So, you know, I apologize if you think I was saying it was about money. No, 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 you misunderstood. Kids and making a difference, I mean, that is obvious. That's what we go to work every day thinking about, sleeping. You know, that's on our mind 24/7, even during the summer. But we have to be taken care of, so money is not the center of the discussion. Okay, and following back to what you're saying about fleeing to Dallas, you know, it is so simple to see. If you compare districts, I'll take my district of Bixby. Starts at approximately $34,000. You can drive 3 hours south to the Mesquite ISD, which is a suburb of Dallas, and literally make $14,000 more. Now people may play it off and brush it off and say, well, you know, the cost of living. But when you compare property taxes, Dallas County is slightly higher by approximately 1%. But when you take into account there's no state tax, there's no tax on necessity foods, that balances out. And, you know, I just, in order to be competitive, especially with our young single teachers, we have to bring that up. Mm-hmm. So that's what I'm here to say.
Thank you.
Thank you for letting me talk so long.
That's all right. Other question back?
Well, I just wanted to respond very quickly. I agree with what you said about the, if I were to make more money a year, I would have, you know, not, and it sounds so petty, but when I go home and I have a roommate there and they've left their dishes in the sink, I don't want to deal with that in the afternoons. I mean, and it does. It sounds so petty. I don't have children. I am a single teacher. And I have been fortunate enough that I'm lucky. My parents help me in situations. You know, I know I am one of the lucky ones when it comes to that. So what I just want to reiterate is that it's just about making it so teachers still want to be a teacher. I mean, if the cost of college for a year is equal to a salary almost, when I went out of state from a Texas, and I did not go back to Texas because I had no interest in teaching for the Texas school systems. And, I mean, in Plano, you start at $47,000 a year. Here I start at 32-ish. And so I am well aware of all of those. And the difference is that this was my choice. This is what I want to do. This is what I know I'm going to do. But it sure would make things easier if it was adjusted, just so I know. I did get in a car wreck. Someone hit my car yesterday in the parking lot of school. And I know I'm not sure what I'm going to do. I'm not married. How am I going to get myself to school? I'm going to have to bum off someone else. So, I mean, it would make the situation much different.
Question over here.
Well, I was a teacher. I'm retired now. But I want to tell you, after I spent 46 years in the classroom, it's all I ever wanted to do. I knew when I was 7 years old I wanted to be a teacher. I love the kids. I love the work. But I did work second jobs. I worked weekends. I worked summers. I worked nights. And the sad thing that really, more than anything else, if you want career teachers, if you want people to stay in the state and stay in the classroom once they become more mature and have experience, you start at 32, and then after, 30, 40 years, if you're really lucky, you'll be making around 50. I mean, whether you need it or not, it's just a sad, it's a sad commentary that there's not any way to really, other than leave the classroom. Your only option if you want to make more money is to leave the classroom. And that's where I was good. That's where I shined. And I'd never for a second wanted to be an administrator. But it is a mission work. It's a mission field, and I loved it. I loved every minute of it. But it wouldn't have hurt my feelings if they'd paid me better.
Dallas, a question for you. There's a lot of talk about teachers working extra hours, a couple of points. There are a lot of professionals who work extra hours. I mean, it's hard. You're hard-pressed nowadays to find anyone working 40 hours a week, even if they make $35,000, $40,000 a year. After you've been teaching for a number of years, are you able to find ways to cut down the number of hours after school and to make it more efficient?
Yeah. I haven't cut down the number of hours necessarily. I mean, how much time you spend on school outside of school is going to vary with your circumstances. I've been personally fortunate in that most of my outside work involves working with and training other teachers. So that's pretty fulfilling. That's rewarding. I mean, it's actually harder than teaching ninth graders in a lot of ways because teachers are a very hard group to work with. But I really enjoy it, and it kind of keeps me on my toes. So yeah, I put in a lot of hours, but I'm weird about that. I like it. I mean, I enjoy the time that I pour into it. But my wife is the big breadwinner in the family, and I'm very aware of that, whether she ever brings it up or not. And she indulges me in this weird hobby of mine.
Question in the back.
Yes, I'm Lynn Stockley, and 41 years educator and president of Tulsa Classroom Teachers Association, and about to retire in 2 months here. Contrary to just working a 40-hour week and then working an extra job for money, I would say most of the teachers I'm familiar with and have worked with are working already 50 to 60 hours a week, for which they don't get any more pay. That's just part of their regular. So then when they work an outside job, that is in addition to that. So it's very misleading to think that most teachers only do the hours that are required of them. In fact, I know a lot of couples where it's been a problem because they come home and either the husband or wife says, put that stuff away. Mm-hmm. You've got to quit doing school. Mm-hmm. You've got a family. You've got other things you need to do. You need to be doing something else. And I watch so much of our population turn over. You realize that more than 50% of your teachers leave within a five-year period. So we're retraining a new group every few years. Mm-hmm. So my question sort of to Meredith, and anybody else can answer it, is I am thrilled that you are still thrilled with teaching. But this is very, this is very new. My whole family teaches. My daughter's a teacher in Chicago. What will it take, do you think, to keep you in this profession? And what do you think is the biggest thing that might happen to make you leave this profession? Because we've got to figure out how to keep the people we have and stop this turnaround that's going on if we really want to make a difference.
Can I start with that one?
Sure. Go ahead.
I'll be brief. But I think it builds on what you were saying earlier. I think one of the biggest things that will keep teachers in the profession, and the money issue has been well covered, is when teachers are treated like professionals and when they're valued. This is an administrator who values her teachers and supports them. I'm fortunate to be in a district where I feel very, I have a lot of autonomy in what I do, and I feel very supported. The numerous letters of frustration, the blogs, the teachers that are bailing, money is certainly a factor, but very often it's, I can't do this anymore. I'm not allowed to teach my kids. I'm not allowed to behave like a professional. I'm being treated like a cog in a machine. And I agree wholeheartedly with all the fulfillment and everything that we were saying back here, and that it's fulfilling when you're effective. Professions are rewarding when you're good at them. They're rewarding when you're able to feel like you're accomplishing something. And that happens when all the way up from your building principal to your superintendent, all the way up to Oklahoma City, when you're in the discussion about what's effective and what's not. And I think the money matters, but I think it's not the only thing that matters. And I think feeling like we're allowed to be effective. Even in Texas, there's teachers that leave when somebody hands them a book and says, on March 8th, this is the lesson you will read, and this is the activity you will give. And really, if you mess up, we'll just press play next time. Yeah. And that's not what I signed up for. So I think that's a huge factor.
Meredith, what will keep you in the profession?
I'm going to just completely piggyback off that. I just want to be treated like a professional. I swear I know what I'm doing. I am not. I'm not playing. I'm not your babysitter. I am working very hard. I am thrilled to be a teacher, but I am getting burned out because the extra duties that I take on in Disney Elementary is a population of 898 kids, and I am the only site tech at that school to make an extra $2,000 a year. I spend every Saturday and Sunday up at that school trying to fix the 5 computers per classroom that we have, which is amazing, and I'm so glad that we have those things. But to spend all of that time up there is exhausting. And I love being a teacher, and I don't think there's something that could make me not want to be a teacher. I really don't. It would have to be something probably drastic and personal to take me out of the profession, because there's very little that I wouldn't do to help a student. So whatever it comes down to, that it's just I want to be treated like a professional. I don't need to be spoon-fed what to do in a classroom. I know. I've gone to college for it. I'm going to go back to college. I'm working very hard, and I am always open for constructive criticism. If you want to come in and tell me how to work and improve myself, I'm dying to improve myself. I think we just need to get back to being a very student-centered community and state, and work on focusing on what the kids need and making sure that's always the most front thing in our mind.
And respect and value is important, but when I came here 3 years ago as administrator, I took a $20,000 cut in pay, and I'm working more hours, and I have more obstacles. I went home one day and I told my husband, where am I? And for me to leave work at 8:00 at night, tired, so tired that I can't prepare dinner for my husband, I go to Olive Garden, and my teacher is serving me. It makes me sick to my stomach because we must value and respect our teachers. And my teacher shouldn't have to be at Olive Garden when he should be home with his families, because after 40, 50 hours at the job, and I'm in an urban at-risk school, and we deal with so many obstacles before we can even teach. So I know that they have the desire, the passion, that we are service people. We are service employees. We service the community in everything we do, because we treat every child at Hawthorne like they were our children. And so therefore I say, no, it's really not about money, but it is. We must pay them what their worth is. And that to me shows my staff that this state values them as professionals. We need to be able to compete. We have to raise test scores. We need the best teachers. Every year I've had to hire 6 teachers. It's not all because I'm dismissing teachers. I lost one of my best teachers this school year, today. I texted him before I came here, and I said, good luck in your new profession. Excellent teacher. He raised my math scores. He had to leave because he needed more pay for his family, a young man about to be married. So, no, it's really not about money, but it is about money. So we want to make sure that this state, because if we don't, other businesses, they value their employees. They take the best and they pay them. And we're saying we want to do a good job. We want our teachers, our students to read on grade level, but we're not going to pay the teacher. And whatever teacher you get, you just get. And the best teachers are going 3 hours away. And so we have to work with third, fourth best, you know? So just think about it. Think about your child, what you want for your child, what's best for your child. You want the best teacher in that classroom, someone who has the passion and desire to be in education. And our teachers here in Tulsa, we want to be here. We want to be in our profession. We value our jobs. We value the little kids that come to school every single day because we want the best for them. And many professions wouldn't be without educators. So
I'd like to recognize, I think, is David Blatt in the room? David, I have a question for you. Oklahoma's always paid teachers very little money, one of the lowest payers of salary to teachers for decades. So it's nothing new. Why won't Oklahoma pay teachers more money? I mean, you can run through administrations of different governors, Democrat and Republican, legislatures, it hasn't changed.
I thought you were going to ask me a tough question. No, I don't think there is a easy answer to it. I think there have been efforts over the last couple of decades with House Bill 1017. There were a lot of components to that bill. That was a major tax increase. We raised the personal income tax, the corporate income tax, the sales tax, with a very clear plan of what to do with the additional money. But first and foremost was to boost teacher salaries, starting salaries, and all the way up. And it did go from, I think it was 18,000 to 26,000, 27,000 pretty quickly. We tried again in the mid-2000s under the Henry administration. There was a real effort 2 or 3 or 4 years in a row of raising the teacher salary scale. We actually made progress. We went from 44th to 39th or 41st to 42nd, and we have fallen behind again. And I don't know that there's a single good reason for it. I think there has been an overall disrespect for public education that we've seen in the state. We've seen budget problems and a tax system that is in utter shambles at this point, and even while we're enjoying an energy boom, we don't have additional money for the budget for a number of reasons that I think not worth going into in detail. So in part it's because the money's not there, and in part it's because we haven't chosen to make this a priority. And I don't know, you know, whether it reflects Oklahoma values or beliefs about education not being as respected here as elsewhere, or really what's involved, but I think it's been a long-standing problem that whenever we have looked like we've made some progress, we tend to fall back again.
Thank you. We have a question in the back.
Yes, my question relates to that, is what more we can ask the public to do to show and demonstrate better support for public education. But let me tell you why I asked that question. In 1974, with a bachelor's and master's degree, I went off, sixth person in my family to be a public school teacher. I loved being a band director. I went down to Sears to apply for a credit card, got turned down as low income, and I documented that I was the highest paid first year teacher in the state of Texas that year. I stayed in the classroom a couple years, but I couldn't afford to remain a school teacher. Mm-hmm. I left the classroom and went into the political arena, but I never left education. Obviously, when push comes to shove, and it makes the floor vote at the Oklahoma House, the Oklahoma Senate, and the governor's signature, it doesn't quite keep up. We're not competitive with inflation. We're not competitive with adjacent states. And had I stayed in the classroom, my purchasing power today would be half what it was in 1974. That's not a good trend. I wish we could have me and other people stay in the classroom, but I couldn't afford it. What can we do to keep that from happening for my grandchildren now in public school?
Mm-hmm. Thank you. I don't know that I certainly don't have the answer to that question.
Yeah. Oh, should I hold that or you? I am a long-time retired educator. And all of you have raised so many good points and issues, and I certainly agree with the money issue, because I think one of the ways we respect people and their expertise is by paying them well. And I think that that's certainly saying teachers are not respected because I think they can get by paying us, you know, not very little. But one of my main questions, and I think, and this has to do with, again, retention of teachers, and I was reminded of this by something Dr. Bitson said about the obstacles to teaching. I think so many of the young people who go into teaching now are not only dismayed by the money situation, but it's by the other obstacles they find in the classroom. And I don't even know whether Dr. Bitson to call it a lack of, I don't even think it's really a lack of administrative support, because I was an administrator and I tried to support my teachers too. But I think in over the years that things have just happened legally and otherwise that have sort of hampered us, tied our hands in terms of keeping discipline for all the students in the school, including the ones particularly in our classrooms who do want to learn, because there are those kids there. And I'm just curious what some of you how might say about that.
Dr. Bitson, do you have any observation about that?
Well, there are many obstacles, not only discipline we deal with. Our students have so many obstacles from their home environment. There's a lot of crime factors that our students are faced with. So not only are we teachers, we're social workers, we're counselors. We're also counselors for the parents. So our hands are tied because we don't have those effective teachers within the classrooms all the time. And sometimes, you know, we don't have counselors for our buildings, so that they can just counsel with the students regarding simple things like social skills and working together in collaborative groups. The obstacles are many, and it's the teachers are coming into the building, they need that support, the resources, but it's far beyond what most educators experienced years and years ago. And unless you know, when I first walked into Hawthorne, half of the things that I see in the building, I had no idea it existed. And unless you walk into those shoes, you really can't understand the journey that teachers have to face each and every day to educate students. A lot of crime that goes on television, it affects Hawthorne, and it affects other schools. But we have to deal with that and counsel our students and then prepare them to teach. Or if they don't have shoes or the right clothing, we have to go out and make sure. A lot of times the teachers, they purchase school supplies for students. They purchase, I had a teacher, first grade teacher just yesterday, went out and purchased a pair of gym shoes for a kid because the shoes were just awful and they needed another pair. So they're taking money that they really don't have to buy resources so that our students can be successful. Because at whatever cost, we want them to be successful. So all of those different obstacles, people think they understand and think they know. And I was in administration 12 years at an elementary before I came to Tulsa, Oklahoma. And I had not experienced half of the things that I experienced with the students within my building. So there are many obstacles, and I wish that more people will come into the public school system to see exactly what goes on and what teachers really face. And then I think we'll have a reality check on, you know, what we need to help them be successful. Because a lot of times it's far beyond what I can do as an administrator. Sometimes I walk out of there and I'm concerned not only for the students but for our teachers' well-being. And I always tell my teachers, I want you to take care of the students, but you have to take care of yourself. And if you're not healthy, then we can't do our job here. And if you're, you know, and being healthy, if you're sick leaving your job, you have to go to another job. That's an obstacle.
A question or comment over here?
The question was asked, what would it take to keep teachers in? I've taught for 20 years. I've taught in three different states. And I've taught special ed and regular ed. I'm teaching kindergarten at the present. To keep me in the classroom, I need more hands for those babies. I don't need more. I love the computers, and she does a wonderful job taking care of those computers. But computers don't cuddle a child who can't draw a square.
I agree. The support has to be there. We need more teachers. We need more staff, support staff.
And I a comment on, like, the obstacle of discipline. If we're struggling to get a teacher into a regular or typical regular classroom, what's the other options for discipline? How are we going? You can put them on a computer, but how are you, if you can't get them into a typical classroom, how are you going to convince a teacher to go jump into this situation? And, well, we need more alternative programs. Well, if we can't get them in a regular classroom, where are we going to put another kid? Because there's not a teacher available for a classroom at this school. We don't have room for them elsewhere.
Dallas, I have a question.
Yes.
I'd like to shift a little to accountability. Some teachers will say, you know, we know how to teach kids. We know what to do. We know how to be creative. It's being stifled. On the other hand, the data doesn't lie, doesn't it? So if we have a global economy. We need to be more competitive. Our students need to improve. The improvement is not showing up. How does that affect you in the classroom?
Are we thinking of student test scores? Are we talking about teacher evaluation?
Student test scores.
Or both? I don't think most teachers are against accountability. That's kind of the way this argument has been oversimplified. There's the pro-accountability and the anti-accountability. And that's not really the dynamic. I think what many teachers are worried about is, how are you measuring accountability? We don't have an enormous amount of faith in the state test. Most of you were aware a couple of weeks ago of the technical problems that came. But even when it's technically working, a lot of us don't have a lot of faith that a handful of multiple choice tests on a specific day effectively capture everything that's going on at Hawthorne or Disney or at Union. So we're not against accountability. We would like to be in the discussion about how we can better measure accountability. You're welcome in my classroom any day, any week. David, you can come by unannounced anytime. I'll get you a little visitor sticker and come on in. I'm fine being held accountable. You can put my kids up against any kids in the city, as long as, you know, if I'm expected to deal with them individually and one-on-one and understand when things are going on in their world, and some of them are just weird, you know, and so they need different They need to be treated different than other kids because they're very inconvenient that way. They're not all the same. They change a lot. Some the veterans in the room know you have those things that worked great 5 years ago, and you did it 4 years ago, three, and you did it this year. Nothing. You're like, crap, I got to throw away all those transparencies, you know, and whatever. And so we're not against accountability. We're a little skeptical of the tools that are used. And there are those, not myself, of course, because I'm optimistic and idealistic. There are those who suspect sometimes that we're not even trying to really measure and hold students or teachers or schools accountable. There's times it seems like we're almost just looking for reasons to label schools as failures so that we can implement whatever agenda we have waiting.
Question or comment there?
Yes. I wanted to say, first of all, it sounds, when I walked into the room, I think that since most of us, including myself, are current or former teachers, you know, this is preaching to the choir. I'm glad that you opened up the idea of accountability, because the one thing that I hear lacking when I hear all these arguments is parental responsibility. You know, I mean, we're treated like underpaid babysitters. We're required, I taught at the middle school and at the secondary school level, and I'm teaching at the junior college level now. And there are problems that, you know, I don't have to deal with. But I'm not blaming the children either. Children are children. Mm-hmm. And children have problems that are, you know, because of the home situation, which they can't control. But the point is that I never hear about, well, you know, I never hear that, where's the parental responsibility? I think that if you have parental support, and, you know, I applaud what you said, because I understand that my attitude was always anybody can come into the classroom anytime. I mean, I understand that the teachers union requires 24 hours. I said, forget it, you know. I said, I have good days, bad days. I don't give a dog and pony show to anybody. But, you know, come in and see this kind of thing. And what I've been told before I got into this by teachers who had been veteran teachers before I got into teaching was they compared what had happened when they had gotten into the profession and the way it was now. And I think one teacher said, you know, the parents used to come by, they used to assist us. She said, it's down to one parent now. She's very loyal, you know, and I appreciate her. But where are all the other parents? I mean, all, you know, many of these kids have parents. Many of these kids have parents that are not working all the time. And if they understand the, you know, the situation, I think the money is important. I really do. But, you know, if you're not going to get parental support, you know, exactly who is supposed to be responsible? Are teachers entirely responsible and administrators entirely responsible for the result? You know, I don't think it's fair, and I don't think you should put it on the backs of children who mm-hmm. are in situations that they did not create.
Well, that's a good question. It's always been a question of mine, too. Let me turn to Meredith, sixth grade teacher. Is there anything you would really like to do to force parents to do what you want them to do? And are you restrained in any way?
No. I am weird in my viewpoint on parent involvement because I am a bit of a Pollyanna. I stick with the belief that if a parent could do it, they would. And I know that you've got the few, but I'm not going to generalize parents down to they're not doing what they need to do. I work at a school. These parents are working constantly. And if they had time, I think that they would. And I know that I am kind of a rarity in that. I've taken it on myself already. I don't know any different. I've taken it since I was in the profession, and I've put the responsibility on myself. And so I'm not going to go beg nor plead with parents to, I mean, if they come in and they want input on something and they're asking for assistance in some way that I know that I can help, I'm going to obviously do that. But I am, and I know that, like I said, I'm on kind of the rare side of this, but I'm not going to do much to beg them to come in. If they want and are willing, I will provide. I will make sure that they are included. I want them there. I do. I want them to come in. I want them to be involved with their kids' education. But if I'm sticking, I will always just try my best to stick with the viewpoint that if they could be here, they would. And that's where I stand on that.
Well, there is so much more we could talk about on K-12 education, but our time is up. We want to thank our panelists, please, for for preaching to the choir, so to speak. And thank you all for coming. Please check us out at oklahomawatch.org. We're stepping up our coverage of education, and we hope we can shed some light and provide some more insights. Thank you again.